Member, we will call the committee to order. As I can see, we don't have a quorum yet since I'm the only member here. So with that, we are going to start with Representative Freiberg's bill. We are hearing bills that deal with alcohol today, and we are going to lay everything over for possible inclusion in an omnibus liquor bill. So with that, Representative Freiberg, to your bill.
Thank you. I appreciate you hearing this bill. It's a local bill. I believe a pretty straightforward bill. It would allow the golf course in the city of New Hope, which I represent a portion of, to have a liquor license there. I asked the city if they would like to have anybody speak on behalf of this bill. I wanted to read you what they said because I found it so remarkable, and I thought members would appreciate this. The city will not be sending a representative as we feel it is a fairly routine request, and we want to respect the time of the committee members. So,
well, Representative Freiberg, you can relate back to the city. We very much appreciate that, and we are going to act favorably upon their on their bill. It's for the New Hope Golf Course.
Yeah. They currently have an on-sale 3.2 malt liquor license.
Okay.
Just to found that golf patrons like to have more options than that. So they are looking to expand it. They're not intending to sell hard alcohol, just stronger beer. But happy to answer any questions.
I would ask you what your best score on the course is, but you don't need to answer that.
Probably a lot worse than yours because I'm not a golfer.
We fit in well together.
Yeah.
With that, Representative Freiberg, I'm going to ask this. If there's anybody in the audience that wants to speak for or against this bill, come on down. Otherwise, we're going to lay it over for possible inclusion in ultimately an omnibus liquor bill. I'm not seeing anybody. Representative Freiberg, thank you.
Yeah, thank
we
you.
Appreciate
so,
it.
Yeah. And just a question about committee procedures. Since it's being laid over, there's no requirement for quorum to be here?
Nope, we don't need to have a quorum because we're not taking action on it. We're not voting on it. The committee will vote on it. When we put together the omnibus bill, we'll vote on all the bills there. So right now I think we're good. And we can even – we're getting the nod from staff just to make sure I was on the right page, but I think we're good.
Okay, wonderful.
Thank you very much, Representative Freiberg.
Thank you.
Representative, who do we have here? Representative Dean, Representative Howe, do you want to come down? Okay. Well, Representative Howe, why don't we hold on and we'll do Representative Dean's bill first, and then we'll do yours. And I don't see Representative Dean here.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Well, we want to wait because we need a quorum for that. We need numbers. So I'm just going to go ahead and do Hornstein's bill for him. Or Dean's bill, and then Hornstein's. No. Is anybody want to testify against it? Okay, so can I go ahead and do Dean's and wait for Hornstein? Members, I don't see Representative Dean here. Representative Dean was a member of our committee last time. Representative Hillstrom, do you want to offer House File 217? Otherwise, I will. We're going to hear it. This is the closing time for the Super Bowl, the letting the bars stay open later. We're not passing any of these bills. We're laying them over for possible inclusion in an omnibus liquor bill or bills.
You can do it, Mr. Chair. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. With that, I will move House File 217 before it. Representative Dean is not here. We are giving him all due credit for it. Representative Dean and I were co-chairs of the Legislative Oversight Committee for the stadium, and members have the bill in front of them, and if you want, we can ask questions of staff, but essentially what we're doing is allowing later closing hours for the Super Bowl. So from midnight on February, or 12 p.m. on February 2nd, 2018, through 4 a.m. on February 5th, 2018. This is something that we've done for large events in the Twin Cities in the past, for the 2008 Republican National Convention. I think we've done it for other events like NCAA committee or tournaments and things like that. So, members, any questions on the bill?
No.
Anybody in the audience want to speak for or against the bill? And we're not, again, we're not voting on this today. We are laying it over for inclusion. Next week or a couple of weeks from now, we are going to put together an omnibus liquor bill. Just in the interest of time, we're trying to run these bills through now before we get back involved in the reinsurance business. Mr. Ranieri, we're just about to be done with the bill allowing the bars to stay open until 4 a.m. for the Super Bowl. You don't need to, but if you want to share the city of Minneapolis's perspective, we always welcome it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We hate to spring this on you right as you walk into the committee, but we're a little bit short of quorum, so we're doing bills that we're not voting on right now.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Gene Ranieri. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the city of Minneapolis. This bill is modeled on two previous pieces of legislation that were adopted by the legislature in 2008 and 2014. One related to the Republican National Convention, the other related to the All-Star Game. This bill is similar in effect that it would allow for bars in Minneapolis and Hennepin County and Ramsey County to be open to 4 o'clock on the Friday morning before the Super Bowl and 4 o'clock Monday morning the day after the Super Bowl. The bill, like its predecessors, would then be repealed at 4:01 in the morning on that day. And the bill has, besides having geographic Ramsey and Hennepin, the Republican National Convention bill had geographic coverage for the whole Southern County metropolitan area, and the All-Star Game was just for Hennepin County. In terms of the other major element, that's the fee. The fee this year is $250. It was $2,500 for the All-Star Game. I think it was $2,500 in the statute, but we actually charged $250. Mr. Chairman, that's in the summary is what the bill does. It's temporary, and we've done it the last two times for big events.
Thank you, Mr. Ranieri. That was a much better summary of what I did. Members, any questions for Mr. Ranieri? Anybody else in the audience want to speak for or against this bill? Seeing no one, Mr. Ranieri, stay there. We have another surprise for you.
Okay.
We're going to lay House File 217 over for possible inclusion in an omnibus liquor bill. And since you are here, I will go ahead, unless Representative Hillstrom or somebody else wants to, I'll go ahead and move House File 283, which is Representative Hornstein's bill. And we do have a testifier in this bill. This is the bill for... for Upton 43, and we have a testifier coming forward that can explain the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I think
you can sit there if you want, or let Ms. Pizik. Okay. Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. Representative Hillstrom moves House File 283. Ms. Pizik, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Sarah Pizik, and I'm representing Upton 43. House File 283 authorizes the City of Minneapolis to issue an on-sale intoxicating liquor license to Upton 43, located in the Linden Hills neighborhood in South Minneapolis. Currently, the restaurant has a wine and beer license, and due to a city charter provision of where they're located, they need to seek this special legislation to allow them to serve all alcohol. The city charter requires that you need a commercial zone of 7 acres if you're south of Lake Street and in the neighborhood, and their current zoning is 5.9 acres. So we've talked with the Linden Hills City Neighborhood Council, and there should be a letter in your packet. They've given approval to this first step of the process to seek the special legislation. The legislature has done this a couple other times in statute for Cafe Maud, which is located on 5411 Penn Avenue South, Broder's Pasta Bar at 5000 Penn, and last year Cap's Grill was included in the supplemental budget bill. I'm just going to give you a couple of highlights of Upton 43 if you're not familiar with it, but it was named the 2016 Restaurant of the Year by the Star Tribune. One of the best dishes named by the Pioneer Press is their Swedish meatballs. 2016 Chef of the Year was Eric Harsey. The USA Today named it one of the top 10 new restaurants in the country in 2016. And today, Chef Eric Harsey was named one of the James Beard finalists for Chef of the Year. So I'm going to introduce Chef Eric Harsey to just say a couple words.
Thank you, Ms. Pizik. What I heard you say was field trip.
Yes, definitely.
So welcome to the committee. Please proceed when you're ready.
Thank you for having me, Mr. Chair.
And if you could identify yourself for the tape, we'd appreciate it.
My name is Eric Harsey. I'm the chef and owner of Upton 43.
We are looking to get a full liquor license for a couple main reasons. One, I think it will allow us a little more even playing field with the downtown restaurants that are currently able to serve alcohol, full alcohol, which then in return I think will allow us to further compensate our staff, have a little better quality of life for the staff with the more income coming in. So thank you.
We're in favor of alcohol restaurants and more income. So it seems like a winner. Members, any questions? Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess if the ultimate reason behind this is the city charter, would it be possible to change the charter? Just I'm looking at this, it just seems odd to be going sort of restaurant by restaurant or address by address when ultimately to say that the locality can do something the locality is for saying it can't do. So I'm just wondering about that.
We can have somebody, but Ms. Right. Bezik, if you want to weigh in on that.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I'm not an expert on the Minneapolis City Charter, but Gene Ranieri or Grant Wilson from the city's regulatory staff are here and could answer that for you.
And Representative Pinto, I think I'll give a little bit of explanation, but and I could get, I don't remember the year, but I think it was back in the 80s or early 90s when the legislature changed the law so that we didn't have to do every single license in the state. Now we just do the ones that, like this one that sort of runs afoul of the city charter. If Minneapolis wanted to change their charter to more easily do these so they didn't need to come to us, that would be fine with us. But we probably have five or six of these from around the state every year. And you're right. I mean, if you want to write legislation to try to change that for the city of Minneapolis and St. Paul and all these other one-off situations, I'd be fine with that. Representative Hillstrom, did you have a question?
That was it.
Okay. Hello, Representative Hornstein.
Hi, Chairman Hoffe. How are you?
We're doing well. Your testifiers are doing great.
Good.
So don't screw it up. Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to speak for or against this bill? With that, Representative Hornstein, do you want to weigh in?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a wonderful new eatery in my district, actually in the neighborhood I live in. And it's wonderful. Yes, please. And, you know, it's I think you've heard it's gotten a lot of accolades and wonderful reviews and best Swedish meatballs I've ever had.
What?
Yeah.
That means a lot coming from you.
And I did visit Sweden once, and maybe the best Swedish meatballs outside of Sweden. So please come to beautiful District 61A. I'd love to show you around, and we can have a bite to eat here.
That sounds good. Thank you, Representative Hornstein. I think I already asked this, but I don't remember. Is there anyone else that wants to speak for or against this bill? Do you want somebody from the city come up? Representative Pinto, do you want more explanation of the charter situation and one-off liquor licenses?
I mean, as long as they're here, if that's okay, I could certainly do it separately.
Sure.
But
sir, if you want to come up, we're always happy to get more information. Please identify yourself for the record and start whenever you're prepared.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Grant Wilson. I manage the City of Minneapolis Business Licensing Department, and the City of Minneapolis does have a fairly rigid charter system for issuing liquor licenses, particularly those ones that are in small commercial nodes that are tucked into neighborhoods. The Charter Commission has reviewed this. They amended the charter about 3 years ago to take away heavy food 60-40 restrictions. It was discussed at that time. We were advised that the Charter Commission would prefer to leave it this way for now, because we won't have so many challenges from restaurants that really operate more like a nightclub that get tucked into our neighborhoods. And if we continually pick and choose without very rigid criteria, that we're legally liable for suit.
Sounds good to me. Representative Pinto, any follow-up?
I guess not. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir. Again, what I heard you say was field trip. We're going to have to do this.
Yeah.
And we're happy to work with the city on these licenses. That, you know, we have probably one a year from the city of Minneapolis, and that's fine. We're happy, and if it works out better for the city, it's fine with us. With that, Representative Hornstein, thank you very much. And Mr. Harsey, thank you. We will try to get down there and have a Swedish meatball.
Thank you. I see wonderful people on both sides of the aisle in this committee, so
well,
happy to host you.
That's very nice of you. Thank you for picking up the tab, Representative Hornstein. With that, Representative Hillstrom moved House File 283. We will lay that over for possible inclusion in an omnibus liquor bill. Thank you. And Representative Dean is here. We already laid your bill over, but we were moving sort of quickly with bills we were laying over because we didn't have a quorum. If you want to come down and speak to that, you're more than welcome to. And thank you, Representative Dean. And I apologize for rushing things, but we were just a hair short of a quorum, so we thought we'd do the bills that we're not actually voting on first. And Representative Howell, you're going to be next after Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair, I just came down to say thank you.
Our pleasure. Wow, that was good. We should get that on tape. Representative Howell, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We hope you are a little bit like Representative Dean.
I can be.
In terms of the brevity. I will move House File 1008 for possible inclusion in an omnibus liquor bill. Representative Howell, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this bill does something similar to what Ramsey and Hennepin County just did for Minneapolis and St. Paul for the Super Bowl. But as I looked at that bill, I thought to myself, if it's good for Minneapolis and St. Paul, it should be, if it's good public policy for that, it should be good public policy for the rest of the state. And if it's good for the weekend of the Super Bowl, it should be good public policy for the entire year. And the reason I say that is if you look at this, I know that there's plenty of hotels that are renting out in St. Cloud for the Super Bowl. I'm sure there are locales in St. Cloud that want to stay open till 4 o'clock also. The other thing I bring up is I know we do this for the large events, and the large events attract a lot of people, and a lot of people have a lot of libations and have a lot of fun. So let's just go back to the Super Bowl of 2016. Was it in Minneapolis or St. Paul? But we did write 165 DUIs that Sunday. So if this is good public policy when we have it in Minneapolis, and we have the event here, and we have all these people here, then I would believe that it's good public policy everywhere. If you go out to Rockville during Rockfest, I'm sure that Rockville, with Eddie's and Stoney's and the Hideaway Bar, during Rockfest would love to stay open until 4 a.m. And I would venture to say that what criteria does the legislature use to determine one event is worthy of staying open until 4 a.m. and another event is not? So I'll just lay it like that, and I'll stand for questions if there are any, but I firmly believe that it's good public policy, and it doesn't force any cities to do this. Cities have to provide the public safety, and it just gives them the option.
Thank you, Representative Howell. Questions? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I assume that this might go to public safety if you're seriously considering including this in a bill. But does law enforcement have any concerns? Because, of course, one of the challenges is you want to make sure that as bars are closing, you don't have rush hour traffic. And one of the reasons why it's less dangerous when the bars close at 2 or 3 in the morning is that you don't have people who are driving under the influence mixing with work traffic. So I assume there are some troopers here that they may have an opinion on this.
Representative Howell.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would say that I think the biggest concern that law enforcement has on it is staffing. It's not so much that they're mixing with traffic. It's that during those hours, they probably don't staff as much law enforcement on from 2 o'clock on. But I will say that if you look at what Minneapolis has had just in the last year and all of the gun shootings that they've had right at bar closing time, I would venture to say that it's possible that if you extended till 4 o'clock and patrons had more time to leisurely leave, you probably wouldn't have all the congestion you have right at 2 o'clock to have all the animosity that we seem to have at bar closing time at 2 o'clock.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We heard that same argument when we extended it from midnight or whatever time it was till 2 o'clock. So didn't it just change the time at which the incidents happened? It didn't spread anything out. I would bet that we would hear that people are still drinking to the last minute, and that's why bars have last call, because everyone's waiting till the last second. And so I would be interested to hear from law enforcement from their perspective of if it would spread it out. Members, 1 in 6 Minnesotans has a DWI, 1 in 6. And so we know that people drink, and we know that people drive. And we need to make certain if those things are going to happen, one, that we catch as many as we can and teach them not to do it, but two, we need to make certain that we are keeping other residents safe when they're going to and from work or they're coming to and from school or they're coming to and from wherever it is. And so it would be interesting to hear what law enforcement's perspective is. The closer you get to work hours, whether or not that becomes a danger. I'm not necessarily opposed to whatever time bars are going to close. I just don't want us to have a fallacy about, I just think you're going to move the majority of the drunk drivers from 2 o'clock in the morning till 4 o'clock in the morning instead of spreading them out from midnight to 4 o'clock. So I just think you move the time.
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hillstrom, I'm not here to say that this is good public policy. But you just, no one asked the question when Minneapolis and St. Paul wanted to do it or Hennepin and Ramsey wanted to do it. Just the bill, just a few minutes ago, nobody asked the question. You moved it from 2 to, you're considering moving it 2 to 4 for Ramsey and Hennepin County. Are you saying that Ramsey and Hennepin County has less congestion and less problems and will have less incidents between that very same argument than the rest of the state of Minnesota? Or you're saying that it's not a concern and it's not a public issue and not a public safety problem for the Super Bowl when you have all these other people in a high concentration here in Minneapolis and St. Paul?
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a reason I didn't move that bill. I moved the bill, and it was laid over. I think I have the same public safety concerns about drinking and driving no matter when it is, and we all need to make those decisions. And I would bet that Minneapolis and St. Paul ramp up their law enforcement duties, and you have many more people providing shuttle services during a short period of time, and those aren't going to happen statewide for every single event that's going to happen. So I guess all I would say is it would be interesting to hear from the law enforcement's perspective whether this would be just pushing those drunk drivers out onto the road at 4 versus 2.
Representative Hillstrom, we are going to hear shortly from somebody from Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and I think they might have a perspective that would be interesting. Representative Howe, to this point?
And that's why I brought up the fact that last year we had 165 DUIs. I'm not saying that this is good public policy. I'm just saying that if it's good public policy to do it on the Super Bowl weekend, and it's good public policy for Ramsey and Hennepin, it's possibly good public policy for the rest of the state. I don't know what criteria you're using to decide when you do it and when you don't. If you can give me those criteria so the other cities in this state can come in and ask for the same options, and who are we as a legislator to decide that? I think, as you said, the locals have to decide. They have to ramp up their law enforcement. They have to ramp up those folks. But why don't we allow that to happen then? If they're the ones that have to deal with it, then let them make that decision, just as Ramsey and Hennepin County in this case is doing that decision. So that is my point, and I'm not sitting here trying to defend one or the other. I'm saying if good public policy is this is what we're doing, then let's allow the rest of the state to follow in on that good public policy.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple questions kind of along that same line, and you may need to get back to me with some information. So one of the things I'd be interested in is if we extend hours from 2 to 4 a.m., do people extend their drinking time? So are they consuming more? Do we have science on that? I would assume we do. We have pretty good public health science on how people drink, and in which case people would be consuming more and likely be more drunk. So I think that having some good data on that would be really helpful to understand it better. My other question would be with regard to public health. The state's job, among other things, is to, as you said, put forward really good, thoughtful public policy that makes Minnesota a better state in many ways. And we put forward public policies to make Minnesota economically viable. And we put forward policies to make Minnesota healthier. And we put forward public policies to make Minnesota students better educated. When we look at an issue like drinking, it is absolutely proven public policy fact that the more outlets and the more hours that people are allowed to drink, the more addiction and abuse exists. And that is true in the state of Minnesota, and it's true in Europe. A lot of people think that there's a conventional wisdom that if you just let people do what they want, we don't have problems with addiction and abuse. And the fact is there's an absolute undeniable correlation, and I think that that's something that we should look at as policymakers.
Thank you, Representative Halverson. Representative Howe?
Thank you, and I'm not going to disagree with any of that, but then if you go out to New Jersey and New York, I don't believe they close before 4 o'clock either. I think you can just about drink all night long. So I think if that is the problem, we should look at what issues that they are having out on our in some of these other cities. But I would say that we can probably look back in the Super Bowl that we've had in past years and seen how much alcohol has been sold, and maybe Minneapolis can provide us those receipts as far as we have extended those hours and those the different big events that we've had. But I don't have access to that information, but maybe our friends from Minneapolis can provide that.
And Mr.
Representative Halverson.
Just to follow, the data do exist with regard to the extended hours in other municipalities in other parts of the world, so just there's a direct correlation.
Thank you, Representative Halverson. Representative Lunden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, first of all, I disagree with Representative Hillstrom's contention that if you change the closing time from 2 until 4, that everyone now stays until 4. Been there. What happens is you have a two-hour period. People have an opportunity to leave now, and in fact, that does not occur. As far as the argument with Representative Halverson that there's a problem with letting people do whatever they want, we want to be sure and bring this up when we have our marijuana debates, because I agree with some of that. But I have four adult children, and they're conditioning for seat belts and drinking and driving is so tight and so attuned, which fostered the advent of Uber and the demand for that, which is maybe everywhere in Minnesota now. I come from a town of 199 people. I had a son that was up at the Muni and had two beers and Ubered back out to the hunting lodge. And, the young people, that's their reflex. And so I don't see this as a problem at all.
Thank you, Representative Lunen. And I think at this point we'll have Ms. Calistro from Mothers Against Drunk Driving come down. And I will just say that we are living in a different world when you can take Uber back to the hunting camp. Ms. Calistro, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Chairman Hoppe. Thank you for letting me testify here today and members of the House Commerce and Regulatory Reform Committee. I am Gina Calistro, the chair of MAD's Public Policy Committee. I lost my father, Mike Calistro, who had just retired from the Minneapolis Police Department after 35 years of service, on Easter Sunday 2010 to a repeat drunk driver who had been ordered to install an ignition interlock device but failed to do so. My mother, also in the crash, survived life-threatening injuries, faced with years of physical therapy around her injuries, but more painful was the loss of my father, her high school sweetheart. To remind the committee, every day in this country, 28 people are killed, and every 2 minutes someone is injured in a drunk driving crash. Over the last 5 years in Minnesota, 508 people lost their lives to alcohol-impaired, 0.08 or greater, crashes in our state. More than 10,000 were injured. In 2015 alone, there were 107 deaths, the highest number of alcohol-impaired fatalities since 2011. That means not even 3 days has passed where some Minnesota family must deal with the tragic loss of a loved one. Six families a day must deal with the devastating injuries sustained by family members in these same crashes. MAD does not take a position on what the appropriate hour is for establishments to serve alcohol to cease the sales and the service of these products. However, MAD does advocate for setting uniform statewide cutoff limits on the sale of alcohol beverages in order to end the practice of bar hopping, to find establishments with the later closing hours for just one more drink with the likelihood of impaired driving as a result. MAD is concerned with the language in the bill before you. We believe it's permissive. Establishments serving alcohol may stay open till 4 a.m. We know there's already variation in closing times for many establishments that serve alcohol, but extending the permissible serving window another 2 hours later makes the likelihood of differing closing times even greater. This will encourage even more bar hopping and enhance drunk driving for patrons with a will to find that last drink. MAD is also concerned that this greater closing time variation will create even more significant burdens on already stretched law enforcement resources. Obviously, that's near and dear to me, with my father being a police officer. I was raised as a cop's daughter. In many rural areas of Minnesota, there already isn't a 24/7 law enforcement presence patrolling the roadways. By extending service hours and making more likely the variations in establishment closing times, a change in current law will make it even more challenging for law enforcement officers across the street to keep our highways safe. I am here before you today as a voice for drunk driving victims, survivors, past and future, who depend on you to do your part in preventing these wholly avoidable tragedies. MAD strongly encourages this committee to consider all sides of this proposition, especially the effect of the proposal in creating even greater variation in closing times. The weight of the safety of motorists using Minnesota roadways are paramount over all issues. I just wanted to thank Representative Hillstrom for acknowledging our DWI issues here in Minnesota. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Calistro. Representative Howe.
Okay, to the testifier, with your feelings about the Minneapolis or the Ramsey and Hennepin extension, then that's my only argument. I'm just looking at, if it's good public policy for them, it's good public policy for the jurisdiction that I'm just asking you that do you have the same contention for that as you do as for this bill?
Ms. Calistro.
Thank you. I don't agree with extending it. I don't agree with extending it past the 2-8.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Members, any questions? Is there anyone else in the audience that wants to speak for or against the bill? Ms. Calistro, thank you. Nice job. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, my name is Matt Langer, and I am the chief of the Minnesota State Patrol. I appreciate the opportunity to comment. I met with Representative Howe earlier today and expressed the concern that you've already heard a couple times. For us, it's not as much a question about when bars close, but how we staff appropriately for that bar closure. And while I'd like to say that we have 24/7 coverage with troopers all across the state of Minnesota on any given day, the fact is that we do not. And so we staff the best we can, keeping in mind that the 2 a.m. bar closure presented challenges for us when we moved it from 1 to 2 a.m. back in 2003. And interestingly enough, the year that occurred, that law changed, we also were fortunate to gain 50 troopers to handle the difference in the bar close changing from 1 to 2. So changing the bar close from 2 to 4 would be a significant impact for us, and we would not have the staff to adequately handle the additional traffic, whether they are impaired or not, but the additional traffic that would come as a result of that population moving around the state at 4 o'clock versus at 2 o'clock, nor would we have the staff available to deter drunk driving, arrest those that do make the bad choice and do drive, or tragically, as you've just heard, clean up the mess and investigate those collisions that result as because of drunk drivers making bad choices. So just wanted to provide that concern on the behalf of the State Patrol. I met with Representative Howe. He's well aware of that, and this would be a significant challenge for us to handle. The only place that we have 24/7 staffing every night, all the time, you can bank on it, is in the metropolitan area, followed closely by St. Cloud and Rochester, where we do our best, along with Duluth. But it's thin, to say the least, in those areas, and we have our hands full with troopers that are routinely in St. Cloud arresting one trooper, three impaired drivers a night, already more than 2 weekends this year.
Chief Langer, thank you. We appreciate you being here. Normally you go to public safety. We're happy to have you here. We have a lot of questions for you. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We don't really have that many questions. I thought that'd be funnier. I'm sorry. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colonel, my thinking is that the Super Bowl weekend is a pretty different weekend. So when you talk about resources, can you talk about the resources available that you expect to be available Super Bowl weekend in terms of law enforcement from other communities around the country, et cetera? I guess that just feels, to what Representative Howe has talked about, that feels like a very different doing that one weekend versus what you've described. Can you comment on that?
Colonel Langer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pinto, it's a great question. So as Representative Howe testified, I think there were 165 impaired driving arrests just a couple weeks ago for the Super Bowl that happened in Houston. Through our federal grants, we do a lot of additional work on key weekends, Super Bowl weekend being one of them, and safe to say next year when it's here we would do the same thing. So our ability to staff up and use resources like federal money for overtime of course, is different for a one-off event or one night a year than it would be as a public policy issue confronting us all across the state 365 nights a year.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Colonel, I guess I have the sense that there'll be law enforcement from other communities, whether around the state or maybe even from other states, potentially, who might be, I may be wrong about that second point, but who'd be around during that one weekend that the other bill pertains to. Do you have any insight into that or any knowledge about that in terms of planning?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pinto, there certainly will be additional law enforcement coordinated by Minneapolis PD. The extent to which those additional law enforcement resources are specifically dedicated to impaired driving enforcement is probably less than what people might think.
Okay. To follow up on that, if you don't mind, Representative Pinto, so if we need to have a lot of law enforcement from other states because, I don't know, the Vikings are in the game, do we have provision for that? Okay, I thought that'd be funnier too. Forget it. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I feel a little bit of ambivalence about the Super Bowl bill as well, but I feel like the difference there is that's just the one weekend, and also, Colonel, I guess the final point I want to ask about is you referenced geography. So you said there's 24/7 support right now in the metro. I guess that's another difference between the Super Bowl bill and this one, is that's just Hennepin and Ramsey, where there is that 24-hour presence, et cetera, and, of course, the additional Super Bowl. This is statewide, where I gather there's not that presence currently and would impose more costs. Is that right?
Colonel Langer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think that's a fair statement.
Okay, good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Pinto. Representative Halverson, do you have a question?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I apologize for my ambivalence about asking a question. I forgot my question, then I remembered it. Captain Langer, I am curious, the ride-sharing issue was brought forward, and I'm curious if you have any studies with regard to the impact that Lyft and Uber and others have on drunk driving rates, if there is some kind of a correlation. It certainly sounds like, from the statistics, drunk driving is still a major issue in Minnesota and around the country, but since it was brought forward, I'd be curious if there's studies on that.
Colonel Langer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Halverson, I didn't come prepared to testify on that specifically, but we can certainly get the numbers through the Office of Traffic Safety. What I can tell you is, although there are a lot more options today than there probably were even just a few years ago, but certainly 20 years ago, for people to make good decisions and get home safely with a sober driver, the number of impaired drivers arrested by the State Patrol went up last year, and it still hovers, 25,000 a year or so still get arrested. So from our perspective, there's no excuse to drive drunk anytime, but especially today with the resources available, yet we still struggle to get people to make good decisions and take advantage of those resources like we just heard Uber to the hunting shack. From our perspective, with traffic safety is a wonderful decision. Gets you there safely and gets you there without being arrested.
Thank you, Colonel Langer. Members, any other questions? Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to speak for or against this bill? Seeing none, thank you, sir. Come on down. Please identify yourself for the record and start whenever you're ready.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. I was prepared to testify. I thought I might be called on today, so I'll try to do best I can. First of all, you should know I am a board member of Mothers Against Drunk Driving, so I was here to support my colleague who did a very nice job. I'm also an attorney.
Sorry to interrupt. Could I get you to identify yourself for the record?
I'm sorry. David Palm, P-A-L-M.
Thank you, Mr. Palm.
I should know that better than that. I'm an attorney in St. Paul. Representative Pinto is my representative, and he's also a colleague of mine because he's a prosecutor. I have been an attorney for 17 years. In that time frame, I worked in Ramsey County Attorney's Office, been a suburban prosecutor, and I'm also a prosecutor for the city of St. Paul. I'm here not to testify in my position for the city, but just as my experience, because I can't speak on behalf of the city. I'm not authorized to do that. But I'm here as a member of the board and as an attorney and citizen. I can tell you, in my experience, by extending bar times, it only caused further problems. It's going to cause more DWIs. It's going to cause more domestics. It's going to cause more disorderly conducts. We see in our line of work, and I can tell you from experience just this week, that nothing good happens after midnight. In fact, a judge said that to a DWI offender this week when I was in court. The DWI offender was a young woman. She had her parents there supporting her. Her blood alcohol was 0.14. She was stopped at 2 a.m. Now, just imagine if that time was extended to 4 a.m. Her blood alcohol level would probably be a 0.18 or a 0.20. That is an extreme detriment to not only her, but other people on the roads. And, you know, we talked a little bit about the impact on law enforcement. I mean, this is going to have a significant impact on law enforcement. We're going to need more police officers. We need more prosecutors. We simply don't have the resources to deal with this. I mean, unfortunately, local government aid has been cut drastically by this body. The city of St. Paul has lost a lot of local government aid. The taxes are going up astronomically, and we don't have the resources to deal with all these things. There's a city I know in Pine City. It's true, sir. My taxes have went up 8-some percent. They have. I can show you my tax bill. They have, because of local government aid cuts. And we don't have the resources. We have not added a prosecutor in our office in years. In fact, we lost one. Representative Lesh, when he came up here, we don't have representative. We didn't replace him as a prosecutor in our office. So our resources are strapped. And it's unfortunate if this bill gets passed and we don't get additional resources. So I would ask you to think about those things. If it does get passed, we're going to need more resources. We're going to need more police officers. We need more prosecutors to deal with these issues that are going to arise by a later bar time. I'd be happy to answer any questions from my experiences as a prosecutor or as an attorney, and as my work with the board. I've been on the board a good number of years, so sadly I've seen the impact that drunk driving can have on families.
Thank you.
I think by extending these hours we'll have further victims, unfortunately.
Thank you, Mr. Palm. Representative Davids has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the witness, you made a statement that's very false, patently false. Since I've been tax chairman, we have never, ever cut local government aid one dime. So when you say we cut local government aid, what years were you referring to?
Mr. Palm.
Well, like I said, I'm not here necessarily to testify in my position as a city attorney or as local government aid. I can tell you that in the years that Governor Pawlenty was governor, local government aid was cut. I was almost laid off during that time, including several of my colleagues in the office. And I think the local government aid has not increased. So it's been cut. I don't know. It hasn't increased, and I can tell you my taxes have gone up.
It has increased.
Thank you, Mr. Palm.
I don't think we're here for
Mr. Palm. Mr. Palm.
Yes, sir.
I'm running this committee.
Thank you.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The witness is making false statements, and local government has not been cut. It has been increased since I've been chairman. Now, I can go back to Abraham Lincoln, and I think it wasn't raised that year, possibly. But I think we should stick to the subject and not make false statements about tax policy in this committee.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Members, any other questions for this witness to this point? Is there anyone else in the audience that wants to speak for or against the bill? With that, Representative Howell will give you the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll close by, the cities and the counties are the jurisdictions that have to police and contend with these issues. If they do not want to allow their bars to be open till 4 a.m., they can continue their current ordinances and nothing will change. This just allows the local jurisdiction to make that decision instead of coming to the legislature to make those decisions. And I'm just here to say that if it's good public policy for Hennepin and Ramsey, and if it's good public policy for that Super Bowl weekend, it's good public policy for the entire time, and it's good public policy for the rest of the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Howell. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 1008 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus liquor bill next week or the week after. With that, members, we do now have a quorum, so we will look at Representative Swidzinski. Did you have a chance to look at the minutes from our last meeting?
Yes, I approved the
minutes. Thank you, Representative Swidzinski. Representative Swidzinski moves approval of the minutes from last week. Members, any corrections, comments, questions about the minutes? Seeing none, those in favor of Representative Swidzinski's motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Thank you, Representative Hoppe. Motion prevails. We are moving on to Representative Bliss. House File 368. And I will move House File 368 and recommend that it be re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law. Okay. Representative Bliss, before you start testifying, we have a author's amendment. I will move that, the A2 amendment, to get the bill into the shape that you would like it to be. Members, any questions about this author's amendment? See, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This will actually make me have no questions if this is adopted.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. With that, members, those in favor of the adoption of the A2 amendment, signify by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Thank you. Ms. Pompeo, you have a small technical amendment to the just adopted A2 amendment?
Chair members, yes. If we look at line 1.5, before the word military beneficiary, I believe we should have an A.
That seems simple enough and I think makes it more clear. Members, any questions about that simple oral amendment? Seeing none, those in favor of the adoption signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. Thank you, members. The oral amendment is adopted. Representative Bliss, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. This is a bit more sobering of a bill than the previous ones we've heard, pun intended. And unfortunately, this is a necessity right now. We have some people, some companies out there that are taking advantage of our military retirees and charging some exorbitant fees and basically stealing their retirement pensions. And I have a gentleman here from the Attorney General's Office that would like to provide a brief history on it, and then we also have some testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Bliss. Sir, if I identify yourself for the record and start whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jason Plagenkuhl. I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Attorney General's Office, and thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I also have with me Cecilia Gleb, and she's a widow of a military beneficiary who fell victim to the type of scam that this bill is meant to prohibit. I also want to thank Representative Bliss for asking me to testify here today. House File 368 concerns the issue of unscrupulous companies taking advantage of veterans by providing them an upfront payment in exchange for the assignment of their military pay or benefits. The assignment often lasts for years and totals an amount that far exceeds the upfront payment. Actual complaints that our office has received include the following. In the fall of 2015, a company provided a $2,000 payment to a senior citizen disabled Brooklyn Park Marine Corps veteran who had fought in Vietnam. Only later did he realize that in exchange for the $2,000 payment, he had agreed to allow the company to take $10,800 from his military pension over the next 3 years. This pension was the veteran's sole source of income, and he now struggles to get by. In June 2016, a company provided a $2,100 payment to a Rochester senior citizen and widow of an Air Force veteran who was also stationed in Vietnam. Only later did she learn that in exchange for the $2,100, she had agreed to allow the company to take almost $11,000 from her deceased husband's military benefits over the next 3 years. Due to the diversion of these pension benefits, she's been unable to afford basic expenses, such as her telephone bill, and struggles financially to pay even for basic living necessities. Federal law already exists that prohibits assigning the right to military benefits to another in return for compensation. But the problem was that there's no direct enforcement mechanism in federal law. And this bill is intended to resolve that problem in two ways. It authorizes the Attorney General's office to bring an enforcement action against these companies that violate the law by scamming consumers to enter into these type of agreements. And it also protects veterans by avoiding these unlawful contracts. Cecilia's story is similar to the other consumer stories I've described. Cecilia is a 67-year-old mother of five and grandmother of 10. One of her daughters is a single mother of three, and Cecilia helps pay for her bills when she's able to. Cecilia is the sole caretaker of another one of her daughters who's disabled and living with her. And she's also the widow of an Army veteran whose name was William, who passed away in 2014. After William passed away, Cecilia relied in part on his military pension to support herself. But nevertheless, she still struggled to get by. In late 2016, she submitted her name and information online for what she thought at the time was a short-term loan. Subsequently, a company called her and convinced her to sign an agreement. And under the terms of that agreement, only later did she learn that the company was going to provide her with an upfront payment of $2,249. And in exchange, the company would be taking $18,000 from her deceased husband's military benefits over the next 5 years. I'll let, if the chair will allow it, I'll let Cecilia describe how having her deceased husband's military benefits taken away in this manner has impacted her life.
Whatever you want to do, Mr. Flagenfuhl, nice job, and feel free. I didn't catch your last name, if you could
it's
give
Gleb.
Your name.
Gleb, G-L-E-B.
Thank you very much. Please proceed whenever you're ready.
Well, I was going through some hard times, and I found this. They called me out of the blue and gave me this big deal about how I could get $2,000, and, you know, it was around Christmas time, and I do have 10 grandkids and 5 kids, and I'm taking care of my daughter who broke her back. And I thought, well, that'd be nice because I was paying higher interest on another loan. So I paid that off with that, but when they called me to tell me, they never told me anything of interest rates or of, and I asked, and he said, well, we'll get back to you. So I talked to 3 people. And I finally found out about, because I kept saying, can I pay this back? Can I pay this back early? Because I don't want to pay, you know, $18,000. Who does, you know? Oh, yeah, you can pay it back. We'll decide that after the 1st of February. Well, come to find out, after I got my money, after the 1st of February, I got the call from the loan person, and she told me, oh, no, once that payment comes out the 1st of February, you're stuck for 5 years for $300 a month. And I said, then you lied to me. And she said, no, we didn't. And I said, yes, you did. I asked you 6 times, could I pay this back in 1 year, the $2,249, with some interest. I understand that, you know, but not $18,000. So it's kind of left me without any pension.
Well, Ms. Gleb, thank you. You did a very nice job testifying. I'm sorry for your loss, both of your husband and the money, and Mr. Flagenfuhl, I hope you get the guys that did this. Members, any questions? Is there anyone else in the audience that wants to speak for or against this bill? With that, nice job to both of the testifiers. Representative Bliss will give you the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am both proud to carry this bill and angry that I have to carry this bill, and I really do appreciate the time today. And would appreciate if you move it forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bliss. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 368, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Civil Law. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Bliss. Thank you, Mr. Flagenfuhl. Nice job. Thank you, members. And with that,
Chairman Hoppe moves House File 1050. Chair Hoppe, are there any amendments to this?
Mr. Chair, there are no amendments, and I'm just having a little discussion about this bill, and I'm recommending that we lay it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill.
Thank you, Chairman. Please present your bill.
Thank you, and I don't normally do this, but it's a pretty short and to the point bill, so rather than talk about it much, and there are some folks in the audience that are here to speak for and against it, like many things they work on, it's still a work in progress, but I'm going to go ahead and read the bill. I think members have seen it. Notwithstanding Minnesota statutes, I'll skip that part. Minnesota brew pubs may sell malt liquor to a single retail licensee of the Metropolitan Airports Commission for on sale at a single location operated in collaboration with the Minnesota Craft Brewers Guild. Sales of malt liquor under this section may be made directly by the brew pub to the retail licensee or to a licensed wholesaler for distribution exclusively to the retail licensee. Members, the reason I'm doing this is I as our airport is routinely mentioned as being either the nicest or one of the nicest airports in the country. We're there, if you haven't been there recently, they have done a really nice job of upgrading a lot of the facilities, restaurants and other kinds of establishments where you can get a beverage. And we wanted to do whatever we can to allow travelers to see some Minnesota's finest products. And with that, I will stand for questions, or we can have folks come down and speak for or against the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have Mr. Joe Bagnoli, Mr. Brandt Irwin. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify on behalf of or with concerns thereof on this bill? Is there any department personnel that wish to testify on this?
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bagnoli, I was going to say there are people that have been talking to me regularly about this bill. It remains, as I said, a work in progress.
Okay, Mr. Bagnoli? Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Joe Bagnoli on behalf of the MLBA and MMBA, Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association, Minnesota Municipal Beverage Association.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I come here today to testify against this bill. We are concerned about it. 2 years ago, March 5th, so not quite 2 years ago, we came and we were neutral on a sort of similar bill that had to do with allowing brew pubs to sell at the state fair. And at that time, we were neutral on it. I want to talk about why we are opposed today and we're neutral then. We believe that this is a significant departure from current law. Under current law, brew pubs are allowed to produce and sell within their location. They can have multiple locations that they commonly own, which is in true of a brewery. They can own multiple common locations. They could even go to the airport and own a location and sell their product. What they can't do is sell from a brew pub. They can't sell their product in the chain of distribution or to another retailer, because they're a retailer as well. So we 2 years ago, we said we were okay, or we were neutral, for a couple of reasons. One, the state fair is extremely unique. It's 12 days. It's 12 limited days that showcases all of the great things that Minnesota does. And we were given assurances at that point that it didn't represent a wholesale desire to change the laws governing brew pubs. We are concerned, I guess the last thing I said there, while we were concerned anytime there's an exception, I'm reading literally from the testimony from 2 years ago, while we were concerned anytime there's an exception to well-settled regulatory structure, because of the narrowness of this exception, 12 days, the uniqueness of the state fair, and the Craft Brewers Guild's assurance that they only seek to sell the beer at the fair at this location, we were not opposing it. 2 years later, we're back. And it seems that we're looking to change things again and then move it forward. And we remain concerned about this change, as it represents a large change to the current structure. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bagnoli. Any questions from members for Mr. Bagnoli? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have a question for the author. To the author, you said this was a work in progress. Can you please explain to me what you mean by that and what your intentions are?
Chairman Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom. Not exactly. Jeez, I am not funny at all today. What I heard Mr. Bagnoli saying is that he's warming to this idea. Okay, I'm just kidding. Representative Hillstrom, this bill, we are not voting on it. We're going to lay it over. I'm going to continue to talk to people on both sides of this issue, and we're hoping that we can find come to the or at least close to the elusive peace in the valley.
Chair Hillstrom.
Thanks. I got nothing else.
Once a chair, always a chair.
Perfect. Thank you.
Other questions for Mr. Bagnoli? Or Mr. Bagnoli has a comment.
Mr. Chair, if I might, I'm going to switch hats. I also represent the Metropolitan Airports Commission, and they, oddly enough, 2 years ago, I represented the State Fair. I still do represent the State Fair. If there's other clients that they'd like to mix of mine, actually 2 years from now.
Do you issue testimony representing the Metropolitan
Airports Commission? The Metropolitan Airports Commission has not been consulted on this at all, and they are examining the bill to discover.
So, Mr. Bagnoli, what happens if they support it?
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, then I'd have a conflict.
And you have a conflict. Okay. Thank you for disclosing that. Other questions for Mr. Bagnoli? Okay, thank you, Mr. Bagnoli. I also have here Mr. Brandt Irwin. No. Well, I don't have Mr. Brandt Irwin. Anyone else like to testify? Anybody from the department? Okay, with that, Representative Hoppe renews his motion that House File 1015 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus liquor bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chairman Hoppe, apparently Chair Anderson is in committee right now and may need 5 to 10 minutes. What would be your preference, to recess for 10 minutes or until she can come down? Or what's your preference?
We can all talk about our favorite moments from our district again, Mr. Chair.
Well, in tax committee today we had an issue and we had a witness from Culver's, and I begged them to bring their chicken dinners back because they quit those, but they've had to settle for North Atlantic cod and the ground beef. But so with that,
Mr. Chair, that's an interesting observation. My son is 17, and one of the many jobs he's had was working at Culver's, and he still believes it's the finest fast food. I hear that ad nauseum.
And it's a very, very, very good. Very good.
I'm sensing another field trip.
I can.
Mr. Chair, if Representative Anderson is going to be 5 minutes, I think we can wait for her. We still have some committee time left. We can sit quietly and...
How about, Mr. Chair, if we'd recess for five minutes or call the chair?
Excellent idea, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We are now, I did this once and I adjourned. We are not adjourning. We are in recess to the call of the chair.
I did that. I was supposed to recess and I adjourned.
Oh, that's a
big one. So, gotta wait until the next day. So then my staff always has to go on a recess.
Oh, she's here. We did say 5 minutes, so we better start about 5 minutes.
Elvis is in the building.
Representative Applebaum, how many folks have left? How many members have left?
We're here. I don't think anybody left.
Nobody left? Okay. I should have said 5 minutes or less. So with that, let's get Chair Hoppe down here. Okay. We will come back to order. Chair Anderson S. moves House File 318. Do we have Mr. Joel Carlson? Does that sound right? Anyone else that I missed? Or any department? Okay. If you can please present your bill, Chair Anderson S.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, what this does is it creates equality between the beer that we have shipped into the state as we do with wine. So currently under Minnesota law, you're allowed to ship in wine to the state of Minnesota from a winery. We are giving that same courtesy to brewers because there are certain beers that are not sold in Minnesota. For example, Pliny the Elder out of California, Russian River, all of their products that they have. You've got Dogfish Head. You've got several others that are not sold here in Minnesota, and this would allow consumers to purchase that from the brewery and have that shipped for their personal use, not for resale. Mm-hmm. So with that, I will be very brief since I'm late and I feel really bad about that. So that's it in a nutshell, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Let's bring down, if we could, Mr. Brandt Irwin from Minnesota Beer Wholesalers. And again, members, we are not voting on this today. This would be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus liquor bill. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, even though I just did. But if you would, for the record, please, sir.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brandt Irwin. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Madigan, Dahl, and Harlan. And we are legal counsel to the Minnesota Beer Wholesalers Association, a trade association of family-owned distributors across the state of Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. I'm here today to provide testimony in opposition to House File 318, a bill that would expand the permitted sales and deliveries of alcoholic beverages into the state of Minnesota. Specifically, this bill would alter Minnesota's current regulatory scheme and carve out an exception for out-of-state breweries to the detriment of in-state retailers, Minnesota wholesalers, and Minnesota residents by expressly permitting consumers to order and receive 2 cases of malt liquor directly from out-of-state breweries without the payment of taxes on such sales. We oppose this bill because it is a significant departure from current law. Current law generally requires consumers to purchase malt beverages from retailers that sell products for off-sale consumption. This bill would expressly alter those regulations by permitting consumers to purchase directly from an out-of-state brewery and have such products shipped directly to them, completely bypassing Minnesota's alcoholic beverage regulatory system. Current regulations ensure full compliance with age verification regulations and policies, ensuring that malt beverage products are not purchased by minors, specifically by requiring Minnesota consumers to purchase malt beverages directly from the premises of a retailer. The retailer can ensure that the party purchasing and subsequently taking possession of malt beverages has proper identification, verifying that they are legally permitted to make such a purchase. These policies also permit local municipalities, in conjunction with law enforcement, to ensure compliance with these requirements by conducting staged purchases and other sting operations. To the contrary, the proposed bill does not contain any age verification requirements other than to identify that such a sale must be made to a resident of Minnesota age 21 or over, and that the shipping package identify that an adult signature is required. It's not clear who bears the burden of ensuring compliance with this requirement, since there will be no specific regulatory authority over the entity shipping such products. The proposed bill would also negatively impact the collection of taxes on malt beverage sales. Current law ensures that out-of-state malt beverages have passed through the three-tiered system, including coming to rest at a Minnesota wholesaler. This requirement ensures that Minnesota excise taxes as it relates to malt beverages are collected and remitted by licensed and regulated wholesalers. The proposed bill would eliminate the collection of excise taxes and, in fact, specifically exempts the proposed out-of-state direct sales from Minnesota's excise tax requirements. The current regulatory scheme also requires a Minnesota wholesaler to sell to a Minnesota retailer who then in turn sells to customers. This scheme ensures that Minnesota's general sales tax and alcohol sales tax are both collected and remitted by licensed and regulated retailers. The proposed bill specifically also exempts the proposed direct sales from the imposition of Minnesota sales tax and alcohol sales tax requirements, and instead identifies that delivery of a shipment under this section may not be deemed a sale in this state. As a result, Minnesota will lose taxes that would otherwise be paid under the current regulatory scheme. This provides a significant advantage to out-of-state breweries that is not otherwise afforded to Minnesota breweries, who must sell their malt beverages through the effective and regulated three-tiered system. By allowing consumers to bypass the three-tiered system, sales are also being taken away from Minnesota retailers who would otherwise receive the sales now being driven to out-of-state breweries. There's no apparent need to create such an additional avenue for consumers to acquire malt beverages. The current regulatory system in place creates a fair, balanced, and transparent market for alcoholic beverages in which consumers have unprecedented choice and value in the products they purchase. The current regulatory scheme ensures that only those parties legally authorized to purchase malt beverages make such purchases and ensures compliance with Minnesota's tax requirements. The proposed bill would significantly alter the current regulatory scheme in Minnesota, and we oppose this bill. I thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for Mr. Irwin from members? Okay. Representative Loon.
Thank you. Mr. Irwin, as I understood Representative Anderson's presentation of the bill, there are certain types of beer that are not available in Minnesota, perhaps from craft brewers in other states. So when you mentioned consumer range of options and that, clearly there are certain types of beer that are not sold in Minnesota. Is that a correct statement?
Mr. Irwin?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, I think from a practical perspective, the answer is yes. But at the same time, they say that they have the same opportunity to sell to an importer who would import the beer into Minnesota, would come to rest at that importer wholesaler location, and would then be sold to the retailer who could sell it to a consumer. So there is an avenue for breweries that aren't currently selling into the state of Minnesota to sell into the state of Minnesota.
Representative Loon.
Thank you. And the other thing that struck me was about that wine, and this is something I'm somewhat familiar with. I do actually occasionally have wine shipped to me from wineries that I have visited. So is what Representative Anderson's proposing any different from what is allowed to consumers who purchase wine from out of state?
Mr. Irwin?
Mr. Chair and Representative Loon, I think if you just even look at the face of the bill with regards to wine as of right now, you can purchase directly from an out-of-state winery, and specifically by the language of the current bill, you can also purchase from an in-state winery.
this doesn't have that additional exception for in-state brewers, so it only allows you to purchase from an out-of-state brewery.
Chair Lone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Irwin, would they be able to deliver on Sundays?
Mr. Chair, I'll leave that to okay. somebody.
Any other questions for Mr. Irwin? Okay, let's then go to Mr. Bagnoli. Where do you go? I'll tell you what, let's go to Mr. Carlson, and if someone can find Mr. Bagnoli. Thank you, Mr. Irwin.
Thank you
for your testimony. Mr. Carlson, if you could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I own a government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I represent the Minnesota Wine and Spirit Wholesalers Association. I won't repeat the previous testimony, but just know that we have concerns that this allows an unfair advantage to non-Minnesota companies that currently exist as it relates to wine, and we don't want to see that expanded. It lacks public safety controls as it relates to deliveries. And I would tell you, and if you need cards or anybody in the audience needs cards, there are wholesalers across the state of Minnesota that are more than willing to work with out-of-state craft distillers to sell their products. I think the ones that were mentioned are actually available in Minnesota. That is, and we're happy to have that discussion. And whether it's through Breakthrough or Johnson Brothers or other wholesalers, we think they are available, and that's how this system works. That's really how the system works. And every state has controls on the importation of alcoholic and regulated beverages into their state. Minnesota is no different. And to allow an unfair advantage to non-state companies over your Minnesota retailers and wholesalers, we think is a step in the wrong direction. And we would urge caution as you advance this. So I'm happy to answer questions, Mr. Chairman. But we do have concerns about this, particularly on the unfair tax advantage, where you're allowing products to be shipped in that aren't taxed, where somebody operating a business here as a manufacturer, retailer, or wholesaler are paying those taxes. We think that's unfair. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Questions for Mr. Carlson, Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is for the author, for Mr. Carlson. Has there been feedback from our small local breweries? I mean, Minnesota has a burgeoning industry. We've been hearing a lot about it, that people in Minnesota are investing a lot in their businesses. Have they talked about what their opinion is of having to compete with out-of-state? Wine, I think, is a little different situation. I don't think that, you know, the winery in Chisago City is competing with wineries in Napa Valley in terms of their product. But this is kind of a head-to-head product competition. And so would it disadvantage our Minnesota breweries?
Mr. Carlson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Halverson, I won't speak for the craft brewers. But I can tell you from the wholesaler perspective that they are actively engaged in looking at new products to bring in, and out-of-state brewers are actively seeking ways to bring their product into Minnesota, legal ways to bring their product into Minnesota. This does it in a way that is an anti-competitive disadvantage for our in-state breweries that we think is unfair. They have to go through the system like everyone else, and this is an unfair advantage to non-Minnesota craft brewers.
Chair Anderson, as to the Halverson question, or
thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Halverson. If we wanted to widen this so that you could ship beer from in-state brewers, I'm open to having that as an amendment, but I'm guessing Mr. Carlson wouldn't appreciate that either.
Mr. Carlson?
Well, maybe not. You have to understand. There are deliveries going on in Minnesota right now that are three-tier compliant, right, and that are fully taxed. And so in what way are they being delivered from Minnesota craft breweries? Through a wholesaler or through a retailer. They are three-tier compliant. So to suggest that we would oppose that, I don't think is quite fair. Would we allow them to do that without going through a distributor and through a retailer? That's a different question. Can they be delivered in Minnesota? Absolutely.
Representative Halverson? Any other questions for Mr. Carlson? Mr. Bagnoli, if you please join us. State your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Joe Bagnoli, on behalf of the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association and Minnesota Municipal Beverage Association, as a person who represents brick-and-mortar stores, I don't think it should come as any surprise that we are not supportive of this bill. We think we would prefer that the product be bought at the brick-and-mortar stores in all of your communities. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Bagnoli? Okay, with that, Chair Anderson, if you'd like to wrap it up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just ask for your support.
Okay. Chair Anderson renews her motion that House File 318 be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill. Anything else for the good of the order, members, Mr. Chairman? Okay, with that, members, good government all the time. We are adjourned.